The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy,
it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime. And this will be a Footy Prime where we don't worry about swearing, cursing, or how long the show must be. But we thoroughly enjoyed our time.
Oh, God, that felt good.
Get it all out of your systems.
That felt so good.
We thoroughly enjoyed our time on Canada Talks. Serious exam. It was brilliant throughout the World Cup, every single day, give or take, here and there. But yeah, a fantastic time, and we love our partners at Serious exam and Canada Talks. Who knows? Maybe we'll end up on there again at some point. But right now, we can't be silenced. We can say whatever we want. Not that it really stopped us too much. There are a lot of beeps throughout that last month or so. It's over. I can actually say it probably now. The World Cup is over. And had Argentina won that match yesterday, the game would have been over. The sport would have been over. Amy Walsh, Craig Forrest, Dan Wong, Jimmy Brennan, Jeff Cole. I'm James Sharman. That was a really crap final. Like, really awful. Crap, Craig Forrest. It was awful. I mean, there's been bad ones in the past, but recency bias, 4 years ago, it was amazing. This was not that, was it?
No, it was not that. Yeah, we went from the best final ever to certainly the worst 90 minutes I think I could remember in a final forever. Argentina didn't even want to play, didn't get a shot. Not even effort, not even one over 30 feet over the bar, nothing in 90 minutes. Nothing. And then their crap at the end of the game, it just like soiled the whole thing even worse, I thought. Absolute embarrassment.
It was the antics, right, Jimmy? It was the antics as much as it was the negative approach. I mean, we know what they do. They foul, they embellish, they whine. Yeah. We kind of expected that, but you also expect a little bit of football thrown in there, especially you've got number 10, you know, sitting on an island up top saying, come on, guys, give me the ball. Let's try something here.
Yeah, I think it was, they found it difficult getting the ball to Messi as well, didn't they? You know, he was trying to drift, and I just felt Spain defensively were too good, limited the spaces. They knew where Argentina's strengths were, and they stopped it. So, look, and the thing is, too, with a final like that, two good teams, it's a bit of a chess match. Both teams don't want to be that team that makes a mistake, because if you do go 1-0 down, you're in trouble. And I think that's what the majority of the game was just two teams that were a bit hesitant at times, didn't want to make mistakes, didn't want to be the team to concede. That's the way that it played out. Look, in the end, the better team won. Spain won. I'm happy with that. But yeah, there was
yeah, super enthusiastic and joyously happy, Jimmy.
Yes, right. You can tell delighted. He's just delighted.
Delighted with
effervescent.
I'm over the moon right now.
Yeah. Well, so Jimmy, it seems that you also hold Spain partially accountable for that performance overall yesterday.
When you say performance, right, are you being negative at the tactical side of the game where you're just like, oh, this is boring football?
No, I must knew that. Yeah, are you?
It's two teams that were really tactically aware of the situation. Both canceled each other out at times. When you watch it, yeah, you watch England-France game, you go, this is amazing. Especially as a neutral, right, because there's goals, it's end-to-end, things are going on, but... You know, with a final like that, with two very tactical teams, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that.
It was shit. Give me a break. Give me a break with all that tactical shit. Passing the ball sideways.
Yeah, because they're trying to get through and open up space. They're not just keeping possession for the sake of possession. I enjoyed it. I enjoy when I see two teams trying to break each other down.
No, yeah, but Argentina didn't, though, did they? Did they try and break Spain down?
No.
They tried to penetrate. What do you think? It was a rondo? They're just keeping the ball for the sake of keeping
the ball? Well, no, they didn't even try and keep the ball, though. They offered nothing. That's my point. And listen, I will always acquiesce to your tactical knowledge over mine, 100%. But I saw nothing from Argentina. No ambition at all. Zero ambition. They defended really well, admittedly. Of course.
So that's ambition there.
That's ambition in defending really well?
Yeah, of course.
You don't win by defending really well.
They conceded 12 shots on net. That's lucky.
I don't know, guys.
Dubs, what's your thoughts, Dubs?
I think from Spain's perspective, like, I think Argentina were successful in canceling them out. They had intent, they had purpose, but from Argentina's perspective, their purpose was to disrupt. Their purpose was to provoke, they were.
I agree.
Okay. It's like, are you being sarcastic again? Because I can't tell. No. So in a way, that was as high as the bar was going to get for Argentina. Like, that was what they were seeking to do. And it was effective for long spells in that game through 90 minutes. They were able to get the reigning European champions and everybody's favorite coming into this World Cup, a team who had just grown in how impressive they were. You know, in dispatching another team that had become everybody's favorites in France in the semifinals, and did so rather easily. So I think that was a success, except you forgot to layer on, and you forgot the fact that you did have quality in your team, and you should probably seek to try to go forward a little bit yourselves and try to create something. But I think they were quite happy with neutralizing. They were quite happy with just being petulant on it in a 1v1 perspective, like in those battles, and being chippy and shithousing and doing all that stuff. And then they forgot about the brilliance that they also have in their squad. They were content. They were sort of relegated to that as part of the game plan. And I think once they saw that they were being successful, then they didn't need to do anything else. And I think the game would have been worse than we're all talking about if Argentina had been successful in seeing out that extra time and go into penalties. Imagine how furious we would have been if Argentina had gotten Spain to pens and they had won.
No, I'd be so mad. Do you not think, though, and you're right, Dubs, it was in the previous matches as well, that was Argentina's game plan, where they rattled the opposition and they take control of the game. Mm-hmm. And they go. But it was almost like they were trying to rattle Spain, but Spain weren't biting. And they were getting even more frustrated now because they're like, fuck, we can't get into these guys. And Spain was just continued just playing and doing their thing. So I think that's where the big frustration with Argentina came into play, was they just couldn't get out of their skins. They couldn't disrupt them.
And it is that mindset, right? It's a good point, Greg. That mindset of Spain. You can't. There's a one in the second half when, I forget who it was, probably Paredes. He tried to push Yamal into Yamal.
You can do
Yamal.
You and Peter Drury. Yeah, it's an issue.
It's the Yogi himself get it wrong as well. Yamal.
Yamal.
Try to push him into the boards, right? Off the pitch.
Ugh.
And Yamal just kind of smiled and just walked away. Can't get into these guys. These guys have ice running through their
veins. No, that's not true. He swung a little and said, don't touch me, and walked away. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He threw a little bit of an elbow. But it didn't connect. Yeah. It didn't connect. It was get your hands off me. Because I think it was like in that, hey, the pinching, grabbing, all of that kind of nonsense. Yeah.
But that an example of this, the mind frame of the Spanish players, and why we talk about their ability on the ball, possession, tactically, how great they are. But it's that other intangible. They're winners. They know how to get through a variety of different opponents. And if you're going to try and go at them and get under their skin, good luck, because that's not going to happen either.
Totally great. Built for it. Totally built.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were brilliant. Conceded one goal. The goalkeeper had 9 shots on target in 8 games.
Mm-hmm.
He won the Golden Glove. I'm not sure how you, like, I'm not sure he should win the Golden Glove. Like, Martinez had more shots in that game than he had Simone. In 9 games. Like, 8 games. What are we talking about?
Craig, it's because of his organization of his defense, right? That's what it is, right?
Yeah. I mean, he was excellent with his distribution on the ball, and that's what they needed. They didn't need a goalkeeper. The best goalkeeper is on the bench. It was Raya.
Yeah.
But it also, it reminded me, Dubs earlier this week said, you know, I like to have an upset. And upsets are great, but they also can lead. This reminds me of like tennis in Wimbledon, where someone wins in the quarterfinals who's not supposed to win, gets to the final, and then kind of gets blown out. Argentina, I don't know if it was boring to me, but it was uninspired. Yes, as far as someone watching. It wasn't, you know, I just sat there going, are Argentina going to try other than just play defense? And they went into their little umbrella with Messi at the top, never touching the ball or very little touching the ball. And then when he did, like the whole world stopped because you thought, oh, he's going to score. And that also made me feel bad because I didn't want Argentina to win. So I'm having all these emotions of, do I want Argentina to come back even though they're just counterpunching? And it's kind of like, you know, I've used the metaphor for tennis, but it's also with boxing. It's like that one lucky punch that brings someone to the championship. And that's kind of how it felt with, what, like 8 minutes left in the match, 10 minutes left in the match. They maybe
when they're down 1-0. When they're down 1-0.
Yeah, when they're down 1-0 and they were forced. Again. Yeah,
there you go.
They were, yeah.
Right, and that's the thing. To me, it wasn't, you can see these games often and it's compelling. It's like you can it's tense. I didn't even get that from this game because there was so little ambition from Argentina, from my eyeballs. And Spain, listen, like I said, Spain had real difficulty creating chances because of that brilliant Argentine organization and defense. I give them credit for that, but you have to also score a goal to win. It seemed to me they were playing for penalties from the opening whistle. Mm-hmm. And that to me is boring. That's my problem with it. I don't mind defensive football. I'm all about it. Go right ahead. Park the bus. But you have to have a counterpunch. But there wasn't even that until they had to.
Yeah, it was like the rope-a-dope without like the punch at the end to knock the opponent out that you've been trying to tire. Right? That's what I don't like about it. Because in a way, even though it's not nice to watch, it makes for, to use your word, Charms, and I think it's a good one, it is not a very compelling match to watch. It's not drawing you into it. It's not making you very likable as a team either, which is not their greatest concern. But I respect it in a way that you're going to fight and claw and you can do your very best to try to be competitive with the team that you're outclassed by. So that part of it I do like, but you've conceded the fact that you're not going to win on the day and yet you have no bite going forward. You have no ambition to go forward and even test Simone to even get into that attacking third. So that's the part that didn't sit well with me. Because I played the majority of my career playing against better opponents where you had to figure out a way to hurt them. You had to figure out a strategy. You had to figure out a tactic to try to break them down. So from Scaloni's perspective, who was very emotional post-game, it should be said, it said that it hurt his soul. But a lot of people, I think it hurt their eyeballs and it hurt their soul to watch that game. And it's Argentina's fault, but it's almost doing your team and your talisman and your legend in Leo Messi a disservice to have employed such a negative tactic that is effective to a certain point. But then you have to try your luck. You have to, and that's the part that didn't sit well with me.
Yeah, Jimmy, if you're Leo Messi, are you angry with the tactics where you were just on an island and even when you drifted out wide towards, you know, second half, you still weren't getting any ball, no service. But it wasn't because they were necessarily being cut off by the Spanish midfield, who were great again, by the way. But it was there's so little ambition to get him the ball to begin with, even on the counter.
Look, I think they're always trying to find Messi, aren't they?
In that game? It just seemed to me they weren't, though.
If he's on an island and he's up top, you have to give credit to Spain as well. As soon as they lost it, how quick did they look to win it back? Mm. Their game plan is not to let Messi get the ball. So what are you meant to do? If I get the ball and you're pressing me and you're cutting off our star player, how am I supposed to get you the ball? And that's Spain's plan, is don't let him get that ball. And if he does get it, we're on top of him right away. So that, you can't say, Argentina didn't want to play it to Messi. Of course, Jesus Christ, that's your whole game plan, is get it to the best player on the pitch so that he can go score your goal. But if you're playing against an opposition that's very organized and pay attention to detail, and they make it difficult for you, then Spain done a hell of a job defensively, not allowing that ball to get to him, which they did. I thought Rodri was unbelievable. I love this guy. I think he's best midfielder in the world by far. And just the way that he plays, and he sits in front of that back four, controls the game. I thought he was instrumental yesterday. And he didn't allow that ball going into Messi's feet.
So it's as much Spain's fault as it was Argentina's.
The blame should be shared.
Yeah, it was certainly, that's a huge part of it, right? And yeah, you're probably right. But I saw Argentina throughout this World Cup play pretty defensive football. But when they had to, they could turn it on and make that pass. I mean, Messi didn't get a touch inside the first 15 minutes. And overall, I forget how many, it wasn't many touches overall. And yeah, surely that's partly to do with Spain. I understand that. But it just seems they were far less willing to try and get in the ball than previous games. They were so almost over-respected Spain to a degree.
It's, look, for me, in my opinion, Spain are different level when they can control a game and they defend. You look what they did to France, and France were like, well, France didn't look like they wanted to go forward because Spain doesn't let them go forward. Spain did the exact same thing to Argentina. They controlled everything. They were like, you're not going forward. The way that you pin in, remember I said about that 4-4-2 flip reverse? They just pin you in. They stop you from playing. And they did the exact same with France, who was meant to win the World Cup, who's got probably the best players on, best attacking players in world football. And they did not allow them an opportunity to get forward and get 1v1 isolated. They're just defensively, they just control everything. They're so good.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I probably wasn't giving Spain quite enough credit, but maybe I was blinded also by the antics of the Argentines throughout this match. It was tough to watch, Craig. It really was. The Enzo gets done for petulance to begin with, the first yellow card. Could have got a red for that, by the way, for the old sarcastic applause, but pretty harsh red cards for that, but you do see them. And then to argue the second yellow when he almost killed a 19-year-old.
Yeah.
I mean, what's he complaining about?
And then Messi tries to get Cucurella sent off.
Oh, I was going to say.
So bad.
Come little on, whiny man. School child.
But that's the desperation. That's where they were at, right?
Yeah. They needed something like that to happen. Something silly to happen, because it wasn't gonna materialize for them otherwise.
It seemed to me in that one, it was like he almost felt almost apologetically like, sir. He just did, Cucurella just did something, you know, like he felt he had to just give his team the edge. Yeah. It would have been a harsh one. Two fingers. Was it two fingers over his mouth?
Yeah.
He was like, right? It wasn't even a hand.
No.
But at what point is it a hand? The FIFA said.
How many fingers? Is it a shush?
Is it a
hand? What are we doing?
Is it this? The bird?
Yeah.
Thank you. Fuck you very much.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Their antics stole the day. Like that, if you want a takeaway from me, it was the antics of Argentinian players to try to get Spain off their game or whatever that approach was. But Craig, gonna out Craig on our WhatsApp, and he said, this is not the game you want to win over new fans, right? Because Argentina came off that. I don't know, unless you're an Argentinian fan, there's, you would have had to be so blinded to say, oh, Argentina, what a great match, and wow, they are sportsmanlike, right? Like, you
so
were
respectful.
So respectful to the game, and like, it was the exact opposite. You'd ever want to use that match and replay to pull people over to the football sides.
Yeah. Then there was a schoolyard fight at the end.
Yeah. Cool.
Which you could have predicted as well, right? Like, I had said early on that I thought the longer this game went with Argentina, Argentina holding Spain level, the more it favored them, because we'd seen them do it four times prior to this final, where there was that grand intangible. It was the sense of belief, the do it for Messi. And then also the reliance on whether it was Enzo, who was obviously sent off, or you had Martinez, or you had Messi himself, or Julian Alvarez, right? With that beautiful curling shot. Like, you had players who were capable of pulling them out of a hole. And that's, let's be honest, that's what they had dug themselves with that performance versus Spain. So again, that didn't turn out the way that we expected, because it was always going to be Spain's match. And they proved that in extra time, where they were finally able to get something over the line. And then I thought Williams was brilliant when he was inserted. And then Torres, you knew that it was going to be Marino. You knew it was going to be Torres. So De La Fuente, in the way that he managed his bench and he managed his substitutions, that was also the edge for Spain. Yes, it was the brilliance in the way that they contained Messi and they defended. And it was that collective that we saw over the course of the tournament. And to Forrest's point about Simone getting the golden glove, it's more about the team defending in front of him than it was perhaps about the brilliance of the goalkeeper. But the scuffle at the end of the game, that also could have been predicted, right? Because you just knew, right? That whether loses. It was, yeah, I mean, you saw it versus England, right? You saw the celebration on the goal when Enzo's over celebrating, or it's known as the second one, on the header, the Messi one off his right boot. And then a substitute runs on and he's taunting the players. And so you could have, again, foreseen it happening. And then, of course, it's Rodri who's been substituted. And then he's caught with, like, he's running past the Argentine. I don't even remember who it was. It's Molina. And he smashes Rodri as he's running by him. And then there's a moment where Rodri clocks the fact that the Argentines are absolute mental cases, where his eyes just kind of get big. And he's like, what have I gotten myself into here? Because it's on a different level. And then I think I caught a still of it. I didn't see it on TV, watching it on the TSN feed. But the fact that they turn their backs to the ceremony when they're receiving the trophy. So I was speaking to my sisters about it. Everybody was over here and we were watching the final, which was a great way, I think, to kind of cap off the tournament, because it was a real celebration of the game, maybe apart from that performance in the final. But my sisters were like, oh, maybe they're watching this ceremony on the big screen. And I was like, no, if I'm certain about one thing, it's that this is deliberate.
Yeah, they're by the fans. That's their excuse. But come on, give me a break.
Yeah.
Right. The Spanish gave them a tunnel when they went to get their medals. They gave them their line of honor, God of honor.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're very unlikable, with the exception of the number 10, right? And I'm not saying they're all evil, but there's a good group of them who are extremely unlikable. I mean, that when that Nico Williams goal was ruled off, that was the first time I thought to myself, really, oh, well, maybe there is something.
does anybody
what is a ghost
was?
Foul?
No,
what the hell
I think it was the foul just prior. Because the whistle, I think the referee did whistle, but I believe that before the goal was scored.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't a foul.
It was backing into the center back, the Argentine center back, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But there was nothing in it.
No.
There's nothing in it.
No. To blow a whistle that quickly,
strange.
You let play go on and then you let VAR take care of it if you're a little bit concerned about it.
Yeah.
So first of all,
that didn't look good.
Didn't look good at all. No. Had that been a defining moment and Spain not have won, you know what we're talking about today. We're talking about a genuine conspiracy.
Yes. Yes. And we're also talking about maybe a little more about Donald Trump giving the medals away, shaking hands, but then not leaving the dais again. And
again, if you could have predicted something, it would have been
But I didn't predict was Infantino trying to get him off this, like pull him off, and he wouldn't leave.
Oh, he pulls him off frequently.
Now that's compelling.
Yeah, but I felt
a year ago he did the same thing at the Club World Cup.
He did it better there because he could pretend that it was the first time. But at least this time, Infantino recognized what was kind of going on, whether he wanted to or not, and made the attempt to pull him off, Sherms.
But that almost looked even more cringeworthy, though, the way he ran across the stage and tried to usher him in.
Yeah.
Oh,
It was cringeworthy, for sure.
I saw a couple of memes after, and there were tons of material for people to go off on, but it was like a picture of Spain, and they're lifting the trophy, everybody's jubilant, and then it's Trump over on the side, and somebody's like, oh, family reunion with the crazy uncle. Like, that's what he looks like. And then it's like the little details that you can dive into after. So as Trump's handing the trophy to Rodri, and Infantino's trying like mad to usher him off the stage. I forget what Spanish player it is, but much respect to him. He's doing the Trump dance. It's like two rows up. And then the only Argentine player that I respected post-game was Romero, who ignored Trump entirely as he walked up. He got his medal from Infantino and then just
walked past him. That as well. Do you think it was do you think it was on purpose or just an oversight? Yeah. Let's assume it was. Yeah. Let's give Romero some credit.
I would like
credit.
To think it, yeah.
Well, Romero's got, you know, he's going to go back to Spurs if that's where he's not being sold. And he's got a lot of explaining to do because of the way he was behaving in the England game, right? And taunting the players after the goals as well. So if he did that, he might win some love back from the England faithful. Because, you know, you look at Spain and the States have a bit of an issue going on right now, right, politically. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the fact that he had to, you know, they had to shake his hand was an image as well. I'm sure they didn't want to. And the fact that the Spanish prime minister was on the stage as well.
Yeah, I don't know how it's pretty difficult to not when you're lined up in that it position. Is.
I don't blame them for it.
No. Like someone did a meme with Lamine Yamal and it was you know, thinking of ROI, return on investment, I'm shaking over the hand. Basically like I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And he was hesitant to shake his hand. But, you know, you've got the president of your federation who's putting on the tournament and the host. You kind of have to shake his hand. That withered, bruised,
band-aided, gross,
tiny hand.
Smelly, tiny hand.
So was that the cringe, the highest cringe factor, or was it the halftime show? Was it the pre-show? Ooh. You know, where on cringe, I think that might be the most cringeworthy part, honestly.
Is that a new streaming service? Cringe?
Cringe. You know what? Let's get that started. Cringe. Yeah,
no kidding. Yeah. Everything cringe. $16.99 a month.
Because the only person I've gone into some depth researching this, the only person in the world that really thoroughly loved the halftime show was Craig Forrest.
That was great.
Craig loved it.
Favorite part. Favorite part, Craig.
The first half was probably the cringe of the get. Like the first half was non-existent. It was like, oh, they're gonna start after the halftime show. I think the players are waiting for it.
Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah. And did you see this stat as well? Like the field tilt was firmly towards Martinez. Right. And in Spain's favor. But I think the stop start nature of the first half was such that the ball was in play for less time than the 27 minutes it took to have the halftime show. It's terrible. But they had the Muppets. So I think that's a redeeming quality. Yeah.
I thought let's go back to the Bieber. Was too slow.
Got a Bieber.
Yeah, Bieber. Bieber kind of killed the vibe.
Bieber's song was too slow.
Mm. What's he thinking about going acoustic?
I don't know. I
was like, half-time show. Like,
lift the crowd, get people going. And
yeah. I mean, we know what Shakira's doing. You know, she's going to play her song, right?
So the
song. The only song
with
she
all
ever
the
sings.
Kids.
Right? Sleepy we know what she's doing. Mind. She's going to lift up, you know. Shakira, someone told me, and they saw it somewhere, that Shakira's like Mariah Carey at Christmas time. They thaw her. We actually be hitting her up. They thaw her.
That's no,
like de-thawing. De-thawing would be freezing her, wouldn't it? De-thawing would be freezing.
Correct.
Right. So they thaw her every World Cup to come out for these events. Mm-hmm. And she looks great and does great. Good for Shakira. No complaints about Shakira.
Who's now appeared in more finals than her ex, PK.
Yeah, that's right.
But... yeah, Bieber comes out and does that. Madonna was pre-taped, wasn't it? Half of it?
Was it?
Looked like it.
Yeah.
And Ronaldo just looked confused.
He's like, where's the buffet? That's all I care about right now.
Oh, boy.
I mean, it's great to see those
that was
two guys,
weird.
Two legends, but it was weird. I mean, combined age, 150, I think it was.
Was that that came up?
I think it was.
Is that she's 70?
Yeah,
she's 67, I think.
I mean, she looks great for 67, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But he was a lip.
Siete.
I mean, if you can look through the makeup, anyway. But it was odd. And then Chris Martin just jumping up and down and smiling about love, love. Sometimes Chris, listen, I like Coldplay. I think Chris Martin's a really good guy. But he does deserve a slap now and again, doesn't he?
Well, I disagree. There's love, there's the flares, the like the drone shot of MetLife Stadium, and it's packed with Trump and other MAGA people, and you've got love and you've got rainbow like flares going off. That's brilliant.
But that's a great hypocrisy of the whole thing, though. You have those evil people in attendance while trying to, but it's all about love. It's about love. It's like Simpsons. What's it called?
Morty. Mr. Burns.
Love.
I bring you love.
Yeah, right. It's like no one's buying this. Trump's sitting right over there. He's creating a new war every day and killing people,
bombing the shit out of everybody.
Yeah.
What do you think? Isn't that
this? This is the worst. Why is he there?
I didn't see him. I didn't see it pictured. But how did he look?
Who's
he was talking.
Tom Cruise.
Oh, the beginning, the pregame, right? Right, Jimmy? Yeah. Did a big monologue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was cringeworthy too. Matt may have been more cringeworthy than the Trump, actually. In comes Tom Cruise, who's got to be 80 himself, who is obviously, I don't know what he's doing, but I want some of that because he looks great.
He's all puffy though, no?
Yeah, I'll take puffy than this.
No, I like you. You look real. I don't know what you look like.
Tom Cruise, I think, is only like, I think he's like 64. And Madonna turns 68 in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. So, you know, they're getting up there. I mean, these are, I mean, I think Madonna and Tom Cruise, didn't they back in the day go on a date? Like Michael Jackson and the chimpanzee? Yeah. Mr. Bubbles.
Why did you say chimpanzee? Chimpanzee.
Chimpanzee. Is the emphasis really on the C, isn't it?
I don't know.
Chimpanzee.
Diaspora.
But it was weird, though. He stands up there and just does this spiel and no one really is listening. And I think he got booed, actually, wasn't he? Was he getting booed?
Well, the Argentina fans started singing. I think they were like, okay, enough's enough.
Okay.
Oh,
and that's right. Really, you know, emotional and say this speech and people just went, now
it's over. Well, it was like the closing ceremonies for Paris, right? It's like, we need somebody who is iconic that makes everybody think of the US, Tom Cruise. So he's like on a motorcycle. It's like, we need Tom Cruise to communicate Americana. It's like, okay, the Olympics are going to be in LA. Call Tom Cruise. He's got like the red phone.
Risky business was 40 years ago.
I don't understand.
More than that, probably. Great movie.
Yep.
But come on, it's time. Anyway,
more excitement than the match, probably.
I don't know. I mean, the States, listen, to our, you know, US listeners, we do respect and love you. You bring from art, music, movies, like no one does it better, right? You're incredible. That wasn't incredible. You also do cringe better than anyone. No one does cringe better than the States.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
The best.
Yeah.
Right?
The best. It's just, you know what the problem is? Cringe had a thread through almost every part of this World Cup. As much as the play on the pitch was amazing, and there were so many things to celebrate from Canada to Mexico into the States, there was a thread of cringe all throughout it. And I think everyone can, I don't know if that's just me, but I would think that most people would admit there was cringiness from Balogun's, you know, all of these political things that are happening that are affecting the play on the pitch, the hydration break, the new how VAR was being used to the benefit of a team that was maybe one of the more unlikable teams, right? Like it's just, there seems to be cringe running through this entire tournament, even though it was spectacular. And let's bring on 64. That's what I'm saying.
Well, how spectacular was it? What is the defining moment? When we look back on this World Cup, years and years to come, you know, we think of 82, we think of Rossi. 86, you think of the hand of God, and you think of Maradona.
Yeah.
90, I don't know, we think of 90. What's the 90? What's the ever? For me, it's Gazza's tears, but I'm an Englishman. So 94, Baggio's miss.
Yep.
Right? 98 would be...
Zizou.
Zizou's brilliance.
Mm-hmm.
02, that's 06 was a headbutt, but 06 was a headbutt with Zizou, the mm-hmm. defining moment, yeah. right?
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
02, what? Rivaldo's, was that 98 was that 02? What's 02?
Was that Rivaldo and the fake ball may have been throw at the corner?
They're all negative things, actually, the defining
moment. Yeah, they are. That? No, not all.
But so what's the defining moment of this World Cup? When we look back on it, what's it going to be? You mentioned there, Wonga, you mentioned hydration breaks, you mentioned Trump, you mentioned the Balogun red card. Messi has to be up there. Mm-hmm. What is it? I don't know.
Messi telling on Chucharra.
What's that, Jimmy?
Chucharra.
Mbappe, 10 goals.
Mbappe, 10 goals. Yeah. Because I guess Jos Fontaine would be remembered for, what was that? Was that 82, Jos Fontaine? Craig, do you remember? When you scored the record, which, by the way, four of which are scored in the third place game.
Right.
I think that's true. Let's look at that. Can you look up JC Just Fontaine and what year he set the record for most goals in the World Cup? But yeah, Mbappe certainly is up there. Maybe it's not one moment per se that defines the World Cup. It's something that happens.
1958.
Oh, Jesus. Was it 58?
Okay, 13 in six matches.
13? But didn't Mbappe have 10?
Oh, wait. 13 and 6 matches in 1958. The most goals ever in a single FIFA World Cup, yeah. 13 goals in 1958.
But wait, now I'm confused. I thought Mbappe got the record this World Cup.
I think he got the record for overall. He scored more goals than anyone, like, aggregate.
Yeah, he's got the
highest goal scorer
ever.
Ever.
Yeah.
But it wasn't in one single World Cup. Okay. No. That's why I'm confused. Too many stats going in my head right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
You did seem confused there.
So Jos Fontaine still has it with four goals in a third place game.
That's the game you want to play in.
Yeah. Apparently. So what's the defining moment? So tell me, any other suggestion? What is it going to be for you, Dubs? Do you think the defining moment or what we remember from this World Cup?
It's tough, like just to pick one moment, right? And this is a recurring theme, like Wonger's talking about the cringe thread, but I think a continuous thread throughout our podcast, even pre-World Cup, was moments, right? And then how do you transfer or how do you translate moments into a movement? I think you're seeing with Spain and like them being the best team at this tournament and the way that they performed and they were so dominant, from a team standpoint, that's what I'll remember. But the moments, I think I have a really hard time picking one. I think one that will continue to resonate because we kept talking about the brilliance on the pitch and how that would override the political landscape, would override any corruption that was happening with FIFA, anything happening with ICE, which we talked to Carl Lang about a couple of pods ago. But I think that one that I will remember years from now will be the way that the U.S. fell flat after that decision. And, you know, the integrity of the game was on the line with the Balogun red being suspended. And then the way that they were humiliated by Belgium, a team that had underwhelmed up until that point. And it was the manner in which it happened. And then the celebration with Lukaku getting that insurance goal and doing the Trump dance.
Right.
So it was almost like it was a convergence of the political and the outside noise with the on-the-pitch brilliance. So I think I might remember that. But the way that Argentina, despite the fact that, you know, we just talked about how disappointing they were because it was so negative and it was almost beneath them, the way that they antagonized and shithoused and were petulant in that game, like not just post-game, but during the game versus Spain to try to get an edge. The way that they, four matches in a row, looked dead and buried. And they were able, by way of a guy that we thought was aging and was not going to be able to exert the same type of influence on matches, was able to do it time and time again, match after match after match. So replicating brilliance. So I think it'll be a toss-up between those two, even though it turns out that they disappointed, they weren't able to repeat as champions. I think it will be those individual moments for Argentina where they looked like they were going to be out. you know, versus Cabo Verde, a team that was able to beat the two finalists, or not beat, but hold them in extra or in regular time, right? Mm-hmm. Both of those teams were unable to beat them over the course of 90 minutes.
Crazy, isn't it? Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the whole point, though, with this Argentina team, just to go back on them, is that entering the final, they were an incredible story. And even how they were doing it, they were physical and they were, you know, played a certain style. We knew that, but they had those moments of brilliance too that I didn't dislike them nearly as much as I did after the final whistle of the final match. Mm-hmm. Right. They really set their standards to a new level in that final.
Yeah.
Right. They were Paraguay on steroids is what they were. If Paraguay was the most dislikable team at this World Cup, you know, up until the final, Argentina, what's that called? What trophy is that called? The Golden Arsehole?
Not bad.
They got the Golden Arsehole Award from Paraguay.
Yeah, it's hollow. It's
don't give it to Emi Martinez. Do not give it to him.
You know what is that, a Fusili Jerry?
A million to one shot, Doc.
A million to one. The ass man. That's what the trophy should be called.
The ass man. Picture of Infantino's face with arsehole on the back.
Just that's making an O shape, yeah.
Good arsehole. Yeah, so listen, I think it was a great World Cup. We looked through it through the lens, Craig, as, you know, we hosted games here in Canada, and that was incredible. That group phase was so much fun for everyone, I think. And there were great games and great moments and great goals. The knockout round hit, and as they generally do, it gets a little bit more cagey. But there were some moments, but there was only a handful, if that, of classic matches at this World Cup, right? I don't think too many matches stand out as saying, wow, that was a match that we'll never forget.
Yeah, I don't know. I think overall, I think it was excellent. The whole Canada story, I mean, you go, that whole first game against Bosnia was just something else, you know, with the, we weren't sure whether it was going to be a sea of red or blue, and we were pleasantly surprised to see it was actually majority red, and the atmosphere, the opening ceremonies, the goal from Kyle Larin, brilliant moment, the Kone injury, him going off on a stretcher, waving to the crowd, like these moments, sure, being held up after they score after that, you know, like, some really special moments that really sort of galvanized the country around this team and the memories of it, I don't think people will ever forget.
Jimmy, to you, was it a great World Cup? Good World Cup?
It was a great World Cup for me. I really enjoyed it. I thought there were some fantastic games. I liked seeing those teams that was the first time in the World Cup getting results, getting their first goal. I think there was a lot of history that was made in this World Cup, which I love, because everybody thought it's too many teams going to be watered down, but those underdog teams actually, I thought, showed well, and they competed. And I think when you look at Ecuador beating Germany and all these games, that there was always something to talk about, wasn't there? Mm-hmm. Throughout this World Cup, and there's a lot of surprises and a lot of firsts, so I loved it. Even look, Canada getting as far as we did, and you know, when you look at the team, Egypt and Congo getting their first goal and their first win, and Cape Verde, that wonder strike, I think everybody remember that goal.
Cabral, it's one of my favorites.
I thought it was brilliant. Yeah, I thought it was a brilliant World Cup. I really, really enjoyed it. Loved it. I'm sad. I think, though,
yeah, I know. There's an empty space now, isn't there?
Seven.
I think that the fears that we had before the World Cup about 48 teams, it just didn't transpire. All the fears we had, you know, you can look back and say, man, like 48 teams actually in the end worked. The stadiums were all full.
Yeah.
No one was shot.
That we know about.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, no, overall, the atmosphere right across the board was brilliant. Really was. That was probably the best part of it. The fans and the people getting together from all around the world.
Yeah. We're going to be breaking down the rest of this week. We're doing this.
Craig, go ahead. Yeah. Even the players that we got to witness during this World Cup, you know, Mbappe, Haaland, Messi, all going for the golden boot. We got to see Ronaldo and Modric, their last World Cup. Like, this was a special World Cup for me. I thought this is, and then we're seeing the next rising superstars coming through with Yamal and others and
Kubarsi.
It was just, I thought it was I thought it was just a brilliant tournament. Just every superstar in world football was there showcasing their talent.
Yeah, there's been nothing like it before, right? That's a great point. The saying farewell to megastars who have defined our enjoyment of professional football for years and seeing these new guys come through. Meanwhile, those in their prime delivered and you know, really threw the World Cup on their shoulders and said, listen, we still got it. Harry Kane, Jude Bellingham from England's standpoint, Kylian Mbappe, probably the best player in the world right now. You know, Erling Haaland, who's going to be around for a while, like who in many ways owned the World Cup. Haaland on off the pitch, his personality resonated with the US audience, thought, which was great to watch.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Kubarsi there. I tell you what, we talked about Luc de Vergerol's emergence as a 20-year-old center back, which was fantastic. This kid's just won the World Cup, starting every single game for Spain. 20.
Yeah.
Almost got killed in the final. By an animal. But man, he got back up, didn't he?
Yeah.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. We're going to be breaking down the rest of this week, little mini-ish pods. We say mini pods, we all say that. And then 45 minutes later, from a Canadian perspective, some big questions. So, and because we're taking some time off, so we're going to pre-record some podcasts for your listening.
But you pretend they're live. Pretend they've just been recorded that day.
Yes.
Just out there in podcast land.
Yeah. Although, in fairness, if we kind of need a break, I'm sure the audience needs a break too.
You'd think. You'd think. I don't know. I think they're clamoring for more
Footy Prime content.
They will let us know.
They'll let us know. Yeah.
If anything massive happens, we'll jump back on and do one, of course. But we've had an amazing few weeks.
And Charms, you, I think we've talked about it, but the World Cup, the stars were starring and they came out and they allowed this platform of 48 teams allowed new, as Jimmy said, new stars to come to the forefront. And I think that is what the extended teams in the World Cup add. Are you looking at Jimmy and his broken internet?
No, it just sounds like Darth Vader hopped on the call here. It's like,
I couldn't hear that. But it added to kind of a showcase of it all, right? Like that is what's spectacular about this World Cup. It really did. It allowed everybody to showcase their skills.
Yeah, it did. Dubs losing her crap. We should probably use that as our cue to say farewell. I hope you enjoyed the World Cup. I'm sure you did. what is it?
My computer is about to die, but my cord isn't long enough. I can't get it in. And I'm pulling the table back even further.
Jimmy's table.
Jimmy's computer is dying. Like, this is perfect timing. He's got through the entire World Cup, and on the final episode of Footy Prime, his computer dies. But anyway, listen, thank you everyone for this. Thanks for joining us. If you did join us for one or all the shows, as I mentioned, there will be podcasts remainder this week, and then we'll reset and get ready for the new season. Still NSL, CPL, MLS going right now. We got an international window in September. Most European clubs are back in camp right now, believe it or not. I hope they give their World Cup players a little bit of a rest. I'm sure they will. But we will be joining you over the next few weeks, as per usual, and onwards, unless we decide not to.
Yeah, broadcast tomorrow. Broadcast dropping tomorrow.
Oh, that's right. There's one tomorrow, isn't it, Dubs?
Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ. Lots to talk about.
Take some time, Dubs. Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. I got Signa and Shireen breathing down my neck. I can't.
All right. Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at @FootyPrimeIG and on Twitter at @Footy_Prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
We took a World Cup. All right. Thanks, everyone. Cheers very much for listening or watching. Until next time.
Everybody, join the club. It's the World Cup on Footy Prime.